Hello and welcome to the AAMFT podcast, your all-access pass to the latest news, developments, and thought leaders in the world of systemic therapy, where we strive to relate, educate, and innovate one episode at a time. I'm your host, Dr. Eli Karam, and we're brought to you by the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. In addition to featuring unique conversation and interviews with established experts, our show provides information and education on direct practice and emerging trends in the MFT profession. For more information, please visit us at aamft.org. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Step inside, take a seat, let's explore the world of therapy like never before. Dr. Eli's here, bringing voices so bright, innovating, relating, and shedding new light. It's AAMFT, where wisdom meets passion. Come listen and see, talking trends, deep insights, and stories so bold. For MFT minds, the future unfolds. Systemic, my friends, we relate, educate, and innovate again. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. Stay systemic, my friends. We relate, educate, and innovate again, one episode at a time. At a time.
Today on the AAMFT podcast, we're diving into an important conversation about diversity, representation, and accessibility in the MFT profession. For far too long, historically underrepresented and BIPOC communities have faced barriers to entering the field of marriage and family therapy. But what if we could change that? What if we could make this profession more inclusive, ensuring that diverse voices and perspectives are not only welcome, but celebrated? Joining us today, two very special guests, Dr. Steve Harris and his colleague, Dr. Ronald Asimwe. They're the creators of MINN, that's M-I-N-N, as in Minnesota, MFT. It's a YouTube channel that brings classic family therapy models to life, presented by modern-day minority therapists. Through their work, they're creating visibility, mentorship, and pathways for the next generation of diverse systemic therapists. So in this episode, we'll discuss why representation matters in therapy, how these systemic barriers can be broken down, and what we can all do to foster a more inclusive profession. So whether you're a student, a seasoned therapist, or simply passionate about diversity and mental health, this is a conversation you won't want to miss. Dr. Ronald Asimwe grew up in Uganda, Africa, and moved to the U.S. in 2016 to study couple and family therapy. His research and clinical experience practicing both the U.S. and his home country integrates multiple cultural perspectives to understand and explore the mental health and relational health needs of African families and communities, many of whom face challenges related to current and historical traumas. Dr. Steve Harris, former guest of our show way back in the first season, some 6+ years ago, is a distinguished professor in the Couple and Family Therapy program at the University of Minnesota's Department of Family and Social Science, along with Ron, who is an assistant professor there. Steve received both his master's and his doctoral degrees from Syracuse and has been practicing as an MFT for over 3 decades now. In addition to his academic work, he's held several key leadership positions, including most recently serving as the editor-in-chief of our flagship journal, that's JMFT, the Journal of Marital and Family Therapy, from 2018 to 2023. You may also know Steve from his work with Bill Doherty. He's the associate director of the Minnesota Couples on the Brink Project. He's responsible for developing training and evaluation protocols for the project that is synonymous with the groundbreaking discernment counseling This is a great conversation. You will enjoy it, and we'll be back after we talk to Ron and Steve. As therapists, you know how common it is for couples or families where alcohol misuse has damaged trust. Even when progress is made in session, that trust can crumble the moment doubt creeps back in at home. SoberLink changes that with discreet, real-time alcohol monitoring. Complete with built-in facial recognition and tamper detection, families get the proof they need to rebuild confidence and move forward. And now, with affordable device rental options, you can introduce SoberLink to clients without the financial barrier. Support lasting change by requesting free client resources delivered straight to your inbox at www.soberlink.com/marriage-counselors. That's www.soberlink.com/marriage-counselors. All right, Eli back with you on the AAMFT podcast. Ronald and Steve. Steve is one of our only two-time guests. And the last time I saw Steve, I was just saying before we started recording, it was face-to-face before the pandemic. He had just taken on a monumental job as editor of our flagship journal, JMFT, the Journal of Marital and Family Therapy. He did an outstanding job there. You may also know him from discernment counseling with his colleague and MFT luminary, Bill Doherty. And now he's here with his colleague, Ronald, who I'm just meeting. And we're talking about their YouTube channel, where they also do interviews. But more importantly, diversity in our field, and it's not only what we need to do as a field to move the needle forward as far as recruiting diverse young professionals into this field, but what we need to do to start and continue a dialogue about that, which is what we're going to do today. But first, Steve, if people don't know, you did a great job 7 years ago. You can always go back in the archives, but tell us the brief origin story and how you got into MFT. And then Ronald, because we're just meeting, I can't wait to hear your origin story, but start us off, Steve.
My story is a lot like a lot of people that have been interviewed or talk about their story of kind of falling into MFT. As an undergraduate, I started as a psych major. I took a family studies class by chance and then realized that there was this thing called family therapy, and then I haven't really looked back since. And in my family science classes, I was starting to get the stuff that I thought I was going to get in psychology. I'm among the group of people that never knew in high school that being an MFT was a possibility. And I think that a lot of people in my age cohort in the field feel the same way. They fell into this and have never looked back. So that's really my intro to MFT and being here. It was just this relational perspective spoke to me. And of course, that's been the story of my career, is being an academic and a professional in MFT.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. My journey is somewhat similar, although from another part of the world, which is Uganda. Happy to be here, Eli. Thanks for having me here. So my name is Ronald. I'm just a professor here at the University of Minnesota. And I'm originally from Uganda, if you can tell from my, I like to joke that it's my Uganglish accent, which is a blend of English plus three Ugandan languages that I speak. So similar to Steve, my journey into the MFT world just started with a deep interest in understanding how relationships shape human experiences. Of course, coming from Uganda, which is a pretty much collective cultural background where who you are and who you want to be is not only shaped by your individual kind of characteristics, as we think about it, maybe in the main psychology field, but really the collective and the collective family, community, and those broad cultural values. So for me, growing up in that context, I really saw firsthand how family structures and cultural traditions influence mental and relational health. I come from a blended family. My dad and mama from two of the major tribes in Uganda, and I grew up in a blended cultural family speaking different languages, which I thought everybody did that until I started traveling and I realized, oh, I'm actually a weirdo because I could move between languages very quickly. So initially going to college, I considered psychology because that's what everybody did in Uganda. If you wanted to work with people, you go study psychology. Because I wanted to learn, first of all, about people and the mind, I was always fascinated by why people did the thing they did and why people behave the way they behave. So I went to Makerere University, which is one of the largest and oldest institutions in Uganda, and studied psychology. And my dad was having a fit. He was like, you're not going to do anything with that. You're going to be broke. And I said, okay, dad, let's see. So while I was in my psychology class, I always felt a disconnect between what I was learning and what I always believed, like people are people because of relationships and who's surrounding them. So I took a class called Family Mental Health. It was an introduction course towards the senior year of my college. And that class blew me away. That's when I realized that the idea of systems thinking, and that class was based on system theory, this really perspective aligned with how I saw the world and kind of my beliefs and what I wanted to work in. The idea that individuals exist within the context of their relationships, families, and communities. Fast forward, there are no MFT programs in Uganda, and still to date, there are no MFT training programs in Uganda. We're trying. Kenya is the only African country that has established MFT training programs at the graduate level. So it meant that I had to leave the country, and they started looking at the UK and Australia, and then landed onto the US programs through an American friend, a Texan at heart, a medical doctor, did some work on projects he was doing in Uganda. And we kept talking. He was in hospice and he had worked with a couple of family therapists. And he's, the way you're sounding, you might enjoy really working with family therapists. And I'm like, tell me more. What is that? Because I didn't know it was called family therapy. I knew I wanted to work with families and people and communities. So I had conversations. He ended up recommending a couple of programs. I started reading up what family therapy was all about. I was like, this is what I've been looking for. So fast forward, I came to the United States in 2016. January, it was spring. And if you come from the equator where Uganda is, spring in Oklahoma was very cold for me. So I landed there, did a master's in marriage and family therapy at Oklahoma Baptist University, which is in Shawnee, Oklahoma. And then after 3 years in the program, I moved on to East Lansing at Michigan State University, where I studied my doctoral work under the mentorship of Dr. Adrian Blow, who is our current president of the MFT, who you both might know well. And so the journey has been growing like that and to date where I work as assistant professor in the Kaplan Family Therapy Program here at the University of Minnesota. So that's really my story into the MFT world. There are a couple of bits that I skipped just for time. But that's a little bit about just my story into this field that I love.
Yes, and you went to one of our gold standards. You're at one of our gold standards now at the University of Minnesota in doctoral MFT education, but certainly Michigan State has taken up that as well. And so many great international MFT scholars have come from there. And yes, certainly Adrian is a colleague, a co-author, and like to give him grief that Adrian is elusively, he takes rain checks on invitations, but eventually he will be on here. But you're correct, he is the current president of the AMFT. And Ronald, your story, it is awesome to hear, because even if you didn't have the language, people, you know, often say that they've always thought systemically, they just didn't have the language. And then you were turned on to MFT and your whole life has transformed, and certainly geographically because of it, which is the goal of, we're talking about this YouTube channel you all have, but the conversation is larger than that. So obviously, Steve's been at Minnesota a long time, and you guys have been just working together recently. And I think the YouTube channel certainly existed before Ronald came to join you, but talk about the goals of the YouTube channel and what you guys are interested in doing and talking about and having a dialogue similar to what we're having today with other diverse members of this great profession that we love so much.
Eli, you talked about the channel existed before Ronald and I worked together, and that really is true. I started this channel years ago because I found myself teaching the research methods class, the family therapy research methods class, and I don't have all the knowledge of all the research applications and approaches and things like that. So I started interviewing colleagues who were involved in different research projects that showcased relational research and things like that. And so I did this YouTube channel because I needed material to present in my research methods class. And so a lot of people have used this. We've got great scholars on that portion of the channel, like Rick Miller, Jonathan Sandberg, there's Ty Mendenhall and Pauline Boss, and great people in the field who have made these contributions. And I just wanted to put more teaching materials out there available for people who had an interest in research. But as my teaching load changed and shifted, as my students have shifted and changed, I'm finding myself teaching an introductory level class in MFT to at both the undergraduate and graduate level. And we have an incredibly diverse undergraduate population here in our major. And I'll have, in a class of 50 people, I'll have 2/3 of them identify as being from some kind of minoritized population. And so oftentimes when I'm showing them the old AAMFT Master Series videos, they bristle a little bit at the language. They bristle that they don't really see themselves in these therapists or the families that they're treating. And so I felt, oh my gosh, I know there are people from minority communities that practice MFT, and I just wanted to start getting people's stories out there about, here I am as a Hispanic man, or here I am as an African-American woman, or whoever has a kind of an identity that's not mainstream or kind of the majority population. What was attractive to them about MFT? Why did they adhere to a certain theoretical orientation? And we wanted the interviews to have a practical element too. Tell us about an intervention and how did it land on your couples or your clients. We want to know about the population they serve and things like that, just so that the students who don't identify with the majority culture can go, okay, I'm not the only one. I'm thinking about this relational perspective, and now I'm hearing from other people that look like me, that have similar experiences to me, and I'm hearing that this is a place where I fit.
I was honored for Steve to invite me on this YouTube project, because I already found when he had the channel, similar to what he shared, when he shared with me this idea, because we co-teach this class together. Steve teaches it in the spring. It's an intro to family therapy class. And we have an undergraduate minor in family therapy here at the University of Minnesota in the Family and Social Science Department. And so Steve and I had those conversations about a classic master video series, if you remember, like Virginia Sotia's Lost Boy or The Depressed Man, showcasing strategic family therapy. And we had students, particularly from culturally diverse background. But also I've had some students from majority population saying, these videos are old and the language is old and outdated. Are there any other faces that you can feature? I don't see myself, what Steve said. And me also as an international, I kept thinking about the field of family therapy is expanded beyond the United States. And we have a lot of people that come here and take marriage and family therapy and go back to their countries. So expanding this under voices of underrepresented MFTs through this YouTube channel by interviewing both BIPOC underrepresented MFTs in the US, but also internationally, what's happening out there? What drives people to the field of family therapy? Because like I shared, a lot of family therapy, a lot of systemic work is happening all over the world and at the national level in culturally diverse communities, but we really don't get to hear much about it. I think our professional association has been doing very well in promoting those voices. So really, for this YouTube channel, we wanted to feature those voices to go back to our students and say, hey, by the way, there's somebody like you and they're doing the work that you might be interested in. So the other point that we wanted to really highlight was that not every family therapist does the models that we learned the same. And so we wanted to highlight, like, how are these MFTs of color adapting some of the MFT models to meet the unique needs of the diverse clients they're serving. And yeah, so really that was our passion and goal, and we're still moving with it.
Lots of things to reflect on there. A couple of things I can relate to Steve is, like, when you're teaching something, you want content. So Steve was just making his own content and then sharing it was really the idea where it came from. I was also inspired by those old, in fact, Bill Doherty and I were talking. Bill Doherty was the one who conducted those old interviews, a famous story, conducted one with Murray Bowen 48 hours before he passed away, his last public appearance, and he captured Jay Haley and many people. Those would be recorded at old AMFT annual conferences, which now it's like the Olympics. There's one every 4 years face-to-face and everything else is virtual. I show those things as both ways to capture where we were as a field. And some of that doesn't age well, and that's part of the conversation. But to capture what that looks like now and the cultural adaptations, what a certainly valid and necessary thing and important to our students learning. The other thing you guys said that really fascinates me is we have the big five mental health professions. MFT is still the smallest and people are still confused. Does that mean you only see couples and families? No, it's a systemic way of working. You can be a family therapist with one person in the room, but showing it to undergrads as a way to turn them on to the profession, especially minority undergrads that have never seen another minority mental health professional or helping professionals. This idea works on two levels, not just for people already in the field, but for people wanting to get in the field. I wonder if you all could say more about that. And what do you think, in addition to a resource like this, what do we need to do to expose just the profession to young minority populations?
Can I add one more point here? And then maybe I'll transition to that question, Eli. It's a good question. It's definitely a broader conversation. But really another inspiration for us to think about is, it came from out of my graduate training where I would meet some MFTs of color who would say, at my undergrad level, students that I taught who would say, I looked into this MFT thing and I don't feel like it's my field. I don't like to work with couples and families, and I just want to work with individuals. And what Eli, you're alluding to is that you don't have to have multiple people in the room to do systemic work. So for this channel and some of the interviews we are featuring and the faces we are featuring is to encourage MFTs of color who might be wondering, is MFT really the thing for me? To let them know that, one, we need them, because we can't all just say, MFT is not my thing, peace out. But then that there are people that look like them that are already doing this work and that they can learn a thing or two from them. So broadly to your question, how do we invite more MFTs of color, minority MFTs in this field? I think it's really starting with a conversation, a dialogue about what we do and how we do it, whether we're teachers or practitioners. I think it starts with demystifying the idea that to do systemic work, you really have to have multiple people in the room to have conversations around what does a systemic way, relational way of looking at mental health problems look like, right? Just starting with a dialogue like that, I think that's one way to do it. And for having folks like me, Iris volunteer, Steve is my faculty mentor here at the University of Minnesota, so I put him on the spot. But I'm always willing to volunteer to be that kind of person who will be speaking on behalf of some minority groups, depending on where I am, that, hey, look, I'm here and I'm doing this work, but I need more faces like you and me to be together in this work and join our colleagues that have probably been in the field for a long time to do this together. So open dialogue, and some of it involves demystifying some of the beliefs about you have to have multiple people in the room. Because when you mention that, many people freak out. They're like, I don't want to work with people who are shouting at each other.
They're not cut out for faculty positions then if they don't want to work with people shouting at each other. Yeah. You know, Eli, one of the things I would say about these interviews, you know, I tend to be a more qualitative researcher. And if I had to look at all these, we have 20 interviews that are up on the site right now. If I had to look at all of these interviews, what I would say is that each person who comes from what we might call a more collectivist culture, each one of them has said family therapy was just a perfect fit. Like, it fit perfectly with my collectivist roots or whatever. And I think there's something about our branding as a profession. Like, I don't know if we're doing a great job with branding and saying this relational perspective, it fits with how you've been raised, or it fits with,
hey man, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It really is.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're doing a great job with getting that message out, because when largely the minority people that I've talked to, they say this just fit. When I heard about this, it just fit in a way that seemed culturally relevant to me.
I love it as much today as I did. But another thing we don't do a good enough job is doing is showing our work. What the masters did back then, and again, we are people that listen to this podcast and know my work, is these common factors that bind us together as a profession of relational healers. And many of what our model developers were doing, especially first wave family therapists, was trying to differentiate themselves, and almost the late great Doug Sprinkle, my mentor, would call the therapeutic rock stars in the battle of the brands. But what those guys did and women did do well was show their work. And the other thing that I would love, I'm just one man, but it's still, when I talk to my students and many of our digital natives now, Steve did a great job of updating the journal with the diversity and equity expansive pieces and articles and submissions and rich qualitative research, as he said, but there's only a certain amount of people that are going to read journal articles. We're digital natives. They will listen to this podcast. It's a big part of our audience. They will watch a YouTube. That's how they get their news. But to see the work, and I'm just curious, I'm trying to think, therapists of color, underrepresented populations, actually doing clinical work and having that being shown of what that looks like, not only what systemic therapy looks like, but systemic therapy delivered in a culturally sensitive way. They're not good training tapes like that out there. I know I'm preaching to the choir. I think part of doing these podcasts is there comes a call to action, but I'm curious what you guys think about that, about actually showing the work. It's talking about it is great. You all are moving the needle, but I don't think we do a good enough job as MFTs of showing our work anymore.
I think you're right. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. Like back in the day when I was being trained as an MFT, MFT would do these master's series at the conference, right? So you saw the Michael White in San Francisco with this family, and you were at the conference, you got to see that. So we've moved away from that master's series. And I think those real time therapy sessions were so powerful and brought so many people into the field. And these interviews that we're doing, we're limited in these as well. Of course, we're not showing their clients, but we are asking specifically about, tell us about a popular intervention. And then how does that land on your clients? And one of the interviews is with a colleague of ours who's at Minnesota. His name is Michael Curtis. He's a graduate from University of Georgia, their MFT program. And he's a strategic family therapist. And there's not a lot of people that are gravitating towards strategic family therapy. That whole idea that tell us what the problem is and we'll outsmart the problem. And when I present the video, A Depressed Man, which is in that master series, AMFT's master series archives, I have a lot of students who really kick against it. Like, this seems weird. This doesn't seem like therapy. They're not talking about feelings and emotions. And it's not even clear that the therapist cares about their clients. But then to hear Michael Curtis talk about one of his prescriptions, one of the ordeals he prescribes to his clients, and says, you guys can have your fights. I'm not going to stop you from fighting, but you have to go to a public place to have your fights, and you have to be at a different park every time that you go to have one of these arguments. And he orchestrated this thing, and he tells this story about how these clients, they got in their car, had to have this conversation, they drove to another park, and as they were driving to the park, they resolved the conflict. And it's just amazing to hear this perspective when so much of what we think about strategic might be harsh or it might be somewhat manipulative. And here are a couple clients from another minoritized population who are benefiting from Michael's adaptation of this model that some people frankly kick against when they see it in the original forms. There's several interviews that we have of people telling about the interventions that they use and how they land. And it's just so heartwarming to see how these foundational theories that were developed in the 70s, 80s, are being massaged a little bit and being rolled out in respectful ways, and clients are being helped by this.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve, for sharing that example. It's a great interview. Encourage everybody to go and watch that, especially if you lean towards the strategic family therapy worldview.
Eli, that's a very good question to really think about MFTs of color showcasing our work, because that's what's missing. And I always think that as my good colleague and friend, EFT trainer, the one of the only few certified EFT trainers, Dr. Paul Giller, always says that the best of the best showcase and tape their work. And I think that's the next step in this work, to really think about how do we now get some of the MFTs that we've been interviewing about their work with culturally diverse groups, now to actually take it to a next step further, to showcase a tape. Right now, we're asking them, like Steve shared, to share an example of an intervention from the model they practice from and how they use that with their client. How did it land? What were the effects of the interventions? But now we're thinking the next level of this project will be to go that next level further and tape MFTs of color doing this work, because I think that the master videos showed us how it's done and that it's still relevant to showcase our work. For me, that's one of the unique aspects we also have as our MFT training. We tape, I don't know, I went to all graduate programs. We would tape ourselves and had all the one-way mirrors. And so we were being watched, and we knew that we were being watched. And that's what we consider to be a gold standard training, tape your work, take it to supervision. But I think that piece that's missing now is showcasing us minority faces doing this work. How does EFT look like when I'm seated in front of a Ugandan couple or a Kenyan couple or an African-American couple or a Hispanic couple, those kinds of things. So I think that's next step, Eli, and we're thinking that direction.
And if you're listening to this now, there are ways that if you are an underrepresented voice that you can be a part of the difference that makes the difference. So certainly Ronald is doing that, and Ronald has the platform of working with a great guy like Steve, being at a top tier institution like the University of Minnesota. But you don't have to be a doctoral level MFT to do this work. In fact, on the ground floor, there is certainly a movement within AMFT and in leadership of our leadership looking more like the people on the boots in the ground that represent our profession. Those are master's level clinicians. Ronald, were you a minority fellow at MFP? So that is one great way. And we've had many guests on the show that built their community. And out of that community came up some great projects. I just had Leslie Anderson and Carmen Smith talking about a great article around unspoken voices of African-American supervisors and how to move the field forward. So there are ways through programs like that. There's also the topical interest network that any member of AMFT can join called Margins to Center. But like, these are ways in addition to your podcast to have a voice, because it's one thing to expose people to something, but to recruit and then build a community. And you were at a great spot like Michigan State where that was very much built in, I think, Ronald, but I'm curious what both of you will think of building a community, because you can turn people onto the profession, but to stay, I've heard a lot, people need to find their people also doing the work.
I would totally agree that getting people in the door is one thing and retaining people is quite another. And so that's how I've looked at this channel. This channel is about both of those things to some degree. It's showing the newer faces, the newer people, what is possible. And then for those who are being interviewed, saying, we acknowledge your work. We want your work to be showcased. And hopefully people feel like, wow, I was asked to do this thing, or there's something unique about that I'm contributing. Maybe they don't feel that way in their own practices because maybe that's more personal. I don't know. But at least I think in our outreach to people saying, we want to hear your story. We want to get that out there. And we've been well received. So I hope that it's a twofold thing for the people who are new to the field, and to help retain people who are in the field and double down on their belonging to the field.
Yeah, I agree with both of your sentiments around. I think it's easy to, people get excited about our field, and it is a very exciting field. In my travel, I travel a lot around the world in my work, and I meet students from all over the world who get excited about hearing about marriage and family therapy, or couple and family therapy. But then the question is, and they get through the door, and then the question is, how do we keep them? How do we retain them? And so having projects like this, because a lot of students, when they graduate, especially minority students, it's, you know, lack of that community. And sometimes the lack of the community is not because the community is not there, but it's because there's no knowledge. This person doesn't have the knowledge about this community. And so having these resources and continuing to post to recommend these resources to our minority students is very important. And at the national level, programs like the AMFT Minority Fellowship, definitely. But those kinds of things and having people to stay connected is really important.
So you mentioned that stood out to you, Dr. Curtis and Strategic, his take on Strategic. A little preview for those that are going to listen to this podcast and then migrate over to the YouTube channel, MinMFT. That's all you have to put in, MINNMFT. So what else have you guys learned, and who are some of your favorite people to talk to on the YouTube channel? And I know it's like picking a favorite child.
Yeah, it's very hard to pick a favorite because they're all great. And Steve and I, he's interviewed more people than I have. And so we watch each other's interviews. And for me, one, I already talked about this, but the three major takeaways that I keep learning and go back to, actually I showed a recent tape of Dr. Cho talking about how she uses Bowen family therapy, particularly with Asian American clients. And for me, one major takeaway from doing this project overall has been really thinking about that there's no
MFT model that is applied exactly as it was originally designed. Therapists are is naturally adapting their interventions to fit the unique cultural and social context and dynamics of the clients that they are serving. So that's really come across all of these interviews that you will interview. I think we interviewed 3 Bowen therapists, Bowenian leaning therapists of color, and they're all talking about the same model, but they're talking about it in slightly different ways and how they apply it in different ways. And similarly related to that is that this is the idea, and one of the interviewees mentioned it, is that these are theories and not rules. And sometimes what I've found in my limited experience in this field, so far I've been around for 7 years, so Steve's and you guys have been here longer, but I find a generation where, and I teach classes right now, and students will read a theory and they quickly say things like, oh, this is not my theory, was not created by me. And I listen to them and I say, okay, this is a theory. And the implication is that this is an invitation. So it's not a rule. We're not saying go do family therapy like Bowen did it, or go do structural family therapy like Minuchin did it, or go be Sue Johnson with EFT, rest in peace. But it is an invitation. It is not a rule. It is an invitation to really wrestle with the theory, examine it, challenge it. And I encourage my students right now, and if you're listening to this as well, that don't stop at challenging, but go further and offer an alternative solution. It could be an adaptation of the model that you maybe particular aspects of the model you don't like, or it could be something completely new, right? So take the challenge a little bit further and say, okay, Bowen gave us this way of thinking about family, this multi-generational kind of way. What pieces of that theory are working? And if it's not working, how can you use that knowledge of this theory is not working to inform your new development? Last takeaway for me is really to think about that we talk about the idea of cultural responsiveness and being cultural responsive systemic family therapists. And sometimes that comes out as maybe to some people in some of the conversations I've had, it seems like it's a one directional, linear way of thinking about cultural responsiveness. But from these interviews, I've been learning that really cultural responsiveness is a bidirectional process. It's not just about learning new interventions and how they work in that culture, but it's also about the humility, having that openness and the willingness to lean in and learn from the clients that these therapists are serving. And so those are some of my top 3 takeaways from these interviews so far.
So Ronald, thank you. I would resonate and echo everything that Ronald just said. He talked about the interview with Dr. Elaine Cho, who was a Bowenian practitioner, Bowen theory practitioner. She probably slapped me if she heard me say Bowenian. I left that interview feeling like it was heartwarming to hear how she applies this theory. And Bowen theory was one of the theories that I was introduced to as a practitioner in training. And the criticism of Bowen theory is always about, oh, it's too male oriented, or it values reasoning over emotion. And for her to say, I'm from an Asian culture, which really values reason and lower expression of emotion and things like that, she goes, this fits so well with my culture. But so like one of my biggest takeaways is when I'm talking to somebody who's really steeped in their model and really knows their theory, it's heartwarming as an educator to go, okay, this stuff is getting through and people are reporting great experiences with their clients. Elaine Chu, Eli, you asked us about one of our favorite children on these interviews. Her interview is really heartwarming to me. I get the same kind of feelings from the interview with Michael Harden, who is an MFT faculty member at Fuller University in Houston. Michael was trained specifically in the Satir model. And when we think about Virginia Satir, we think about this larger-than-life woman who has got her hands all over everybody, and she's touching, and she's facilitating, she's out of the chair, and things like that. Mike talked about doing a parts party, and he created cards to do the parts party that Virginia Satir talked about. And how he explains his intervention with these cards, and when your little girl shows up and my judge shows up at the same time, what happens? And he deals these cards out to his clients, and then they talk about, oh my gosh, these things happen all the time. This part of you shows up when I'm this part of me. And it's just fascinating to see how Satir's work is carrying on in people whose that theory resonates with, and they're carrying on her message. So one of the biggest things I take from this is feeling really good about where our field is going, and how serious people are about their craft, and how what kind of great therapy the public has access to through people who are committed to this relational approach. And I would agree with Ronald that many of these interviews are, it's hard to pick your favorite one, but there are some great things that people are doing. And it's just great to hear the perspectives of my friends and colleagues across the nation and throughout the world who are doing this work.
Yeah, it really is great work. I have been watching them in anticipation of calling you guys. And I think for listeners of the show, if you like listening to this show, the Ronald and Steve's channel is a natural kind of follow-up. And in fact, there are some good overlap between some of the guests we've had over the years as well. So gentlemen, I guess the last question, one of the things that makes this effort for me again so enjoyable is the feedback that I get from listeners, people that I would never get a chance to meet, where they reach out to me via social media, or they see me at a conference, and they also inform the type of shows we do. You've had a really nice dialogue here today, and a lot of people are going to, again, leave this podcast and go and check out your channel. What feedback have you gotten? And this is just one step. Where do you hope we are as a field? Steve and I talked 7 years ago. So if we talk in another 7 years, where do you hope as far as I've said, moving the needle and attracting diverse voices and representations to our field? Where do you hope we are?
First of all, I would say I'm looking for a handful of structural family therapists. Yes. I would love to interview them. And I've been in touch with the Philadelphia Child Guidance place. We're still looking for people. So if you're listening to this podcast and somebody who practices from some of these foundational theories, send them our way. Tell them about the YouTube channel. We'd love to interview them. So I would like to see, like Ronald and I spoke in January about what is a goal for this channel? How many more interviews can we add this year? And so if we're adding 10 to 15 interviews every year, I think that would be great. And I think it would be great that MFT is proliferated into a variety of cultural and social milieus that this channel wouldn't be needed, that there wouldn't be young MFTs in embryo saying, I don't see me in the teaching materials and the pedagogical materials that are being used. So my hope is that we are moving toward making this channel obsolete at some level. That's aspirational for me.
Thanks, Steve. And by the way, listeners, the channel is free, so you don't have to pay anything. In terms of feedback, I agree with Steve what you shared. So this is new. I personally haven't heard from a lot of people, but I show these interviews to my students in the Intro to Family Therapy class here at the University of Minnesota. And so far, the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. I've had both students, majority students and students of color, all from different underrepresented groups saying to me, we really appreciate the authenticity of the conversation that you guys are having with these professionals that look like me or don't look like me or don't think like me. And just the practical insights they gain, because a lot of what happens in our field when students, you all might resonate with this, that when you learn a theory, you're very excited about like understanding the theory, but then how does it look like when you're doing it with somebody in the room only applying that theory? And so students are really loving the interviews. Some I watch with them in class, some assign them as reflection projects and so those kinds of things. But I've had also a conversation with two educators here in town in the Twin Cities, and they were saying that they are planning to integrate some of these interviews, shared about the resource, and they are saying, oh, I plan to integrate these in my curriculum and those kinds of things. So we're hoping that from here on that our YouTube channel will continue to grow and develop. And obviously, I also think about the systemic family therapy field outside the United States. I think about it globally. So like Steve put out a call, if you're there and you're practicing family therapy in another country, please reach out to me or Steve. Would love to interview as many minority folks from the US, minority folks from international settings to hear more about the work that you're doing and how it's landing with the people that you're serving. That's my hope, that our channel will be filled with MFTs from all over the world that are doing this work in communities and settings that maybe we might not have had a chance to reach.
Yeah, and invariably, people always want to continue the dialogue with our experts and guests after they hear the podcast. So it was a nice segue. We'll end with this. Steve and Ronald, tell our listeners the best way to get in touch with you, whether they're a diverse voice and they'd like to be a guest on the channel, or they know someone who would be. So tell them the best way to get a hold of you.
The easiest way is to look us up at the University of Minnesota. My email address is smharris@umn.edu. And Ronald?
Yeah, similarly, my email address is asiim004@umn.edu. And when you go to the University of Minnesota, look for specifically the Department of Family Social Science. That's where Steve and I are housed.
I think the other thing, Eli, is I think they can probably reach out through the MIN MFT channel. If they find their way to that, I think they can probably send a message to the administrators, and that's who we are.
Eli, back with you, bringing to a close another informative installment of the AAMFT podcast. Did you know that AAMFT is active on all your favorite social media channels? Be sure to follow us, the AAMFT, on Instagram, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the world of AAMFT, you can always find the back installments of the podcast anywhere you find your favorite podcast. I am partial to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but it's on Google Play, Stitcher. So please, if you're new to us, check out back installments where we tackle the latest trends and events impacting the world of systemic therapy, like today. And I have a number of pioneer interviews, which is some of my favorite interviews to conduct over the years. You can drop me a line at elikaram.com, where you see everything going on in my world, including two books that are out. One for our young professionals, Marriage and Family Therapy, National Exam, Your Guide for Success. That's from Springer. And that will prepare you for the national exam, including 360 practice questions, a full-length mock exam, proven strategies and tips for test taking, and it's organized to match the domains of the licensure exam. And then, if you're interested in these common factors that we always talk about on the show, including what makes a motivated client, how you build, nurture, and repair a therapeutic alliance, how you maximize your own therapist factors. You want to check out my book, Bringing Common Factors to Life in Couple and Family Therapy, from Rutledge. As always, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, my friends, stay safe, stay systemic.
Stay systemic, my friend.
It's after the Eli of MFT show.
Hear the latest debate with our guests and topics we illuminate. From theory to practice, there's so much to know. Join us on this journey, let the knowledge flow.
Stay systemic, my friends. I'm in the heart of therapy. Your message transcends. Stay systemic, my friends.